This is Digital Story Podcast number 696, July 16th, 2019. Today's theme is 5 Ways to Go Beyond the Postcard Shot. I'm Derek Story. Over the last couple weeks, I've been scouting locations for a Sonoma Coast Exploration Workshop, and I can't tell you how beautiful the landscape is here. In such environments, it's easy just to take pretty pictures. But our workshop crew is going to push beyond that, and in today's show, I'll share 5 of my favorite ways to do that. It's interesting, when I'm scouting locations, I have to move quickly and be efficient. As much as I would love just to hang out in all these beautiful spots, I have a lot on the plate and I have to, get the information that I need to get from that location, make my notes, take a few shots, and then move on to the next spot. For doing this, I typically use my Fujifilm X-F10 because I can just carry it around in my pocket and it renders beautiful photos and it has a nice big sensor and 6,000 pixels on the longest side and it's just terrific. It works great for this particular use. By the time the workshop begins, I usually have quite a collection of very pretty pictures because I'm not really doing artwork at this point. Obviously I'm trying to compose, the best I can and look for what I consider aesthetically pleasing images, but I'm not setting up tripods. I'm not, running filters. I'm not doing all that kind of stuff. I am trying to grab good looking, clean shots that tell the story that I need to tell. And this collection that I have at the end of the scouting period, right before the workshop begins, is usually kind of cool. It is an album of postcard shots. It really is. When I look at these shots, I'm looking at a number of different things. One of the things I'm looking at, of course, is location. Is this location suitable for us going there as a group on this day? All that kind of stuff. But I'm also looking at the shots for, what are some of the things that we can do there that would be interesting photographically beyond the standard postcard shot? And what happens, and I know this has probably happened to you as well, I know this doesn't just happen to me, that whenever you go to somewhere new, especially somewhere new that's very pretty, you become overwhelmed with the new situation and with the beauty. And you just start snapping, snap, 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 picture this, picture that, picture this. If you don't have much time there, it's hard to get into the next creative phase, which is then really starting to work the best scenes and figuring out what you can do that's interesting beyond just snapping a pretty picture. The thing that I like to do for the folks that come out to the workshops is help them accelerate that process. Yes, everyone is going to be taking pretty postcard shots. We want that. And interestingly enough, some viewers and some family members and folks like that, they prefer the postcard shots, right? That's what they want. You show them something that you consider very creative and artistic, and then you show them the postcard shot from the same area. And some folks are just going to want the postcard shot because that's just the way their eyes are. As artists, though, we want to push beyond that. So we want to start with that shot that, everyone's going to like and probably would get a lot of hearts on Instagram, and then move into something that would really get the appreciation of those who like good photography and admire good photography. I look at these shots that I've done on the scouting and I go, this would be great for using this technique. This would be great for using this technique. And I make notes accordingly. So not only do I have locations ready to go, I also have techniques ready to go. And then each day we focus on one or two of these techniques over the course of the event. And it really works out well. And I am always pleased with what appears on the screen during the class presentation at the end of the workshop, because at least our virtual camera club members, the folks that listen to this podcast and support us on Patreon and come out to the workshops, they want to push the envelope as well. So I thought I would share with you, because odds are very good, since a full workshop for me is 8 people, and we're full for this one, that most of you aren't coming. I just doing the math here, right? Most of you probably aren't coming. So I thought I would share 5 of the techniques that I work with folks at the workshop in order to, you know, enhance their creativity and go beyond the postcard. So here we go. The first one on the Sonoma Coast has to be long exposure water shots. Boy, as I was looking at my snapshots that I took in the various coves and at the shoreline, of course, the water in all of those shots is, you know, frozen in action, usually a higher shutter speed. Oh, let's say 1/250th of a second, something like that. I was looking at a lot of these shots, and I would look at the rocks, and I would look at the surrounding landscape, and I go, oh my gosh, that would be so beautiful as a long exposure. And I think long exposure is very low-hanging fruit in this sort of environment. Now, of course, you know, you need to have a tripod. You probably want to have an ND filter, unless you have like the new Olympus, you know, OMD-EM1X, then it has that built-in electronic ND filter, which you could use. And some other cameras have similar features, but you'll need something that allows you to record motion and not just freeze the water at 1/125th or 1/60th or whatever it would be without one of these extra tools. Now, the bonus tip that I have for you and that I have for our workshop members is that if you have an iPhone, you can download the mobile app called Spectra. And I've talked about it on this podcast before, and it allows you to do handheld shots that get that water motion, that, you know, that does that simulation of long exposure with an ND filter. Spectra is good. I love it. I love it. I think it's a terrific app, but I wouldn't want that necessarily for my finished shot. But what you can do while you're scouting and while you're looking at locations and trying to figure out, oh, I think that would be good, instead of going through the whole process of, you know, setting up your camera, setting up the tripod, doing all that kind of stuff, what you could do instead is use the iPhone app, take a quick shot, look at it on the iPhone, and then decide, hey, you know, maybe I should move a little to the right or a little to the left. It's really a terrific way to preview this effect. So I think that is something that works very well. Once you find the shot on your iPhone, then you can set up the camera and do the high resolution version. So long exposure water, that is my first tip. My second one is black and white. And on the Sonoma Coast in particular, which is a very rocky, craggy sort of coast, black and white just looks great. The rocks look fantastic. Depending on what's happening in the sky, it looks great. You know, the water, you can do long exposure with the water in black and white, or you could, you know, freeze the action of the water. Black and white just looks fabulous. And a lot of the cameras that we are shooting now, the mirrorless models in particular, they have some dynamite black and white modes that are perfect for coastal landscape. So shooting in black and white, I think, is much more motivating than just converting it to black and white afterwards. And as I've recommended many, many times on this podcast, shoot RAW plus JPEG. The JPEGs will be the black and whites, and then you have the RAW files that you can do anything you want with if you need to. But shooting black and white, actually shooting black and white, looking through the electronic viewfinder and seeing black and white, that is exciting. And when you're on location, that can really elevate your game because you are previewing the shot in black and white. And black and white seashore landscapes, I think, are wonderful. The third technique is high dynamic range. And I'm not talking about the high dynamic range shot that your camera creates for you. Those are okay, but if you're on a workshop or if you're in somewhere that's really has great potential, you don't want to go that route. I mean, for one thing, you end up with a JPEG. And the second thing is I haven't seen a camera yet create an HDR shot in camera that's as good as what I can do with bracketed exposures outside of the camera. So what I recommend for the HDR work is to shoot bracketed exposures and then take those. We have plenty of lab time at the workshop. Take those and then do the HDR merge on your computer using Lightroom or an HDR app to do so. And I think then that's when you get the really good stuff. The thing I like about shooting HDR is that when you're in the situation, when you're in the field and you see those contrasty situations, but you can also see a composition within all of that contrast, and you go, you know what? If I shoot HDR, I can bring down those highlights enough so that they'll be within range. I can open up the shadows so it doesn't go to complete black. And that composition that I can see with my eye, I can actually create that with an image. And that's when I really like HDR work. So again, I'm going to talk about HDR. I'm going to encourage folks to use HDR, but not the in-camera stuff. Use it where you do the bracketed exposures. And I like 1.5 stops for my brackets. Generally speaking, if you're using Lightroom to do your merge, shoot raw, and you only need to do 3 exposures for Lightroom. Some of the other apps do a little bit better with 5 exposures. I never need to do more than 5 for any of the work that I do. So I think knowing which app you're going to use also will dictate what you do in the field. But I think, again, when we have the time, not only in the field, but afterwards in post, HDR can really help us fine-tune these images and get them exactly the way we see them in our mind's eye. The fourth technique is multi-exposure. And I talk about this on some of my workshops. And I have had a few participants really embrace this over the years. And I've had a few just love it, just go crazy over it. They go, it wasn't on my radar. And I went ahead and tried a couple. And then the next thing I know, I'm really hooked because, you know, I want to perfect this technique and I can really see its potential. Many mirrorless cameras, some DSLRs, and even some 35 millimeter film bodies have this capability. Generally speaking, on multi-exposure shots, I'm only working with 2 exposures, and I'm thinking in terms of a juxtaposition. And, you know, then I bring those 2 exposures together in camera by doing a multiple exposure, and then I can fine-tune it in the lab afterwards in post-production. But this is one of those things that I think really gets the creative juices going because it allows you to tell a story. Right? By doing multiple exposures, let's say that you saw a sign that said something, and then you saw an ironical element, you know, that when working with the sign really makes you smile or makes you think or whatever. But those two elements weren't necessarily in a good composition naturally out in the field. But you know, they did relate to one another or they were semi-close to one another. So then instead, you can do a multiple exposure, shoot the sign, shoot the ironical counterpart to it, do it as a multiple exposure, and that allows you to move the camera, halfway through the shot. You know, you do one element, move the camera, recompose, and then do the second element. And the nice thing about shooting multiple exposure with digital as opposed to film is then you get feedback in real time. You can look at it. You go, I should probably make that first shot a little bit darker. I should probably make that second shot, you know, a little bit lighter or whatever. And you can make those adjustments until you get it exactly the way you want. This is the beauty of digital photography, creative digital photography in particular, because you're working with variables here and you can balance them in the field. So that way, when you bring the shot back to the lab, then all you're doing is fine tuning it. You don't have to like do a major overhaul on it. But I think multiple exposure is a terrific technique when you have the time and you really want to create something a little different. And people, when you pull these off, people who view the shots are impressed and you will get comments and you will have people go, wow, That is really neat. My fifth tip is art filters. And we all have some kind of art filter or creative filter on our digital cameras, on our mirrorless cameras in particular. All sorts of stuff. They could be film emulation, obviously monotones, sepias, dramatic tone, faded colors, you name it. I mean, people have really come up with tons and tons of these built-in effects. The problem is most of us don't use them because when we're doing our regular photography, we don't have time to fool around with them. We don't have the inclination. We're not motivated. You know, all those sort of things. Again, this is something that a workshop environment is perfect for because you can start playing with these filters, start discovering the strengths, the ones that you like, which filters you like, especially for the setting that you're in. Again, shoot RAW plus JPEG. The filter effect is applied to the JPEG. The RAW file remains untouched. So you've got this beautiful safety net if your experiment doesn't turn out. Some of these art filters, though, are very, very good. And the thing that I have learned about them is that it's hard to create that effect in post with just a RAW file. And I have tried. Believe me, I have tried. And in fact, I think that's true with some of the black and white filters that I was talking about in point number two, which is, boy, you know, that black and white that came out of the camera, those engineers really worked on, and it would be hard for me, and I'd spend a lot of time trying to emulate that effect from a RAW file in post-production. It's easier just to shoot it that way in camera. Art filters often are the same thing. They are a lot of fun. And what you can do then is really get to know the one or two or three art filters that you particularly like, really master how to use them. And then when you are working more quickly, when you're not at a workshop, then you can go to one of these and have trust that, you know, you can pull it off and that this thing is going to work and it's not going to gobble up a bunch of time or that you're going to end up with something that you don't like. You will already have done, you know, all of that testing beforehand. But art filters sit there on the camera, sort of like multiple exposure function. It's there and a lot of people just don't use them very much. And I think in certain situations, an art filter or multiple exposure or a really good black and white emulation can take a good shot and make it artistically great. It can really be the icing on that cake. So those are the five things that I'm going to be talking about. And I'll be talking about a few more on the workshop. But these are my five go-to things to really kind of boost your creativity and get away from just a pretty postcard shot. Long exposure water, black and white, high dynamic range, multiple exposure, and art filters. This is good stuff. We're going to have a lot of fun playing with it. And I'm hoping you take a whack at it yourself, maybe next weekend or next time you go out, when you have a little bit of extra time to play with your camera and go out and get your creative on. The latest Nimble podcast is photographer Shelby Nick. I introduced her to you last week, and in fact, I even did a little sound bite. And if you missed that podcast, you might want to go back and listen to what she has to say. She is really cool, and you know, there's a couple things in her interview that I particularly like. She's very philosophical. She's quite upbeat, and you get some behind-the-scenes stuff. You get some good behind-the-scenes stuff of breaking into the world of professional photography. And she is our featured guest right now on thenimblephotographer.com. And that podcast is on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and everywhere else that you consume your podcasts. I've recorded a few more since I published the Shelby one. And when I get back from the workshop, I'm going to publish the next one. And I'll just give you a little hint. He's on tour right now with the Rolling Stones, and he plays keyboards. That is going to be our next Nimble Photographer podcast. If you want to make sure you don't miss any of them, just go ahead and subscribe. And then that way, when I publish a new one, it'll show up right there on your digital device. Here's kind of a fun story. F1.4 versus F1.8, can you actually tell the difference? I love things like this. I'm a sucker for these stories, you know, these comparing, you know, this versus that. And, you know, none of this is really science, but I do get stuff out of them, and they are great food for thought. And as photographers, I think we have to be willing to, you know, tackle our assumptions, question our assumptions every now and then, and just, you know, reevaluate. Let me read you a little bit about this article, and I have the link in the show notes. It's a Petapixel article. Here we go. Given how much it costs to buy an F1.4 prime compared to an F1.8, beginners in particular often ask if the upgrade is worth it. Build quality and optical quality being equal, the difference in light gathering capability and depth of field, are they noticeable? Can you really tell? Photographer and YouTuber Pierre Lambert decided to do a blind taste test, so to speak, and find out if his viewers could actually tell the difference between photos shot at multiple locations at both F1.4 and F1.8, with a few shots taken at F2.8, 4, and 5.6 thrown in just for fun. From wide shots to street photos to tighter compositions with plenty of bokeh to analyze, he captured a total of 7 locations. And here's just one of those comparisons. Can you tell which is which? And again, all you have to do is click on the link. You can see the little video. You can look at the shots and you can try to figure out. Now, my commentary on this, it's a big depends. that's where I am on this. It's funny, in my own personal work, you know, when I'm Derek, the amateur photographer who loves photography and is out, you know, just shooting for myself, I have found that a 1.8 works fantastic for what I want to do. I have an Olympus 45mm f1.8 that's very small, it's very light, and the photos are fabulous that comes out of it. It does a great job of softening the background. It's got enough speed for low light. It is a really nice lens. However, when I'm doing my professional work, when I'm on assignment and I really need to be able to get the shot that I want, regardless of the conditions, then I have the Olympus 45 f1.2. So I don't have the 1.4, but I have the 1.2. You know, there are times in my professional work where I'm happy to have that 1.2, and I find it very useful. That Olympus Pro lens that's at f1.2, the Pro moniker embodies more than just the faster aperture. I think it embodies a little better detail. So there's more to it than just the fast aperture. You know, they're saying here, if all things are being equal between the f1.4 and the f1.8, then, well, a lot of times all things aren't equal because 1.4s are designed more for pros. That being said, the thing that I have noticed over the years with a lot of f1.4s is that you don't get your best optical quality until you stop down to 1.8 or f2. And so I think that's kind of ironical. So the F1.4 does give you some sort of effect. And most of the time I like it because I don't really need the corners super sharp when I'm shooting, you know, wide open a lot of times. But I do think it's interesting that when you read lens tests and so forth, you say, well, for best optical quality for this 1.4, make sure you stop down to F2.8. And you're going, I'm not going to do that. Otherwise, I would just buy an F2, right, and be done with it. So there's a lot of different factors here. We're all photographers. We all know how this works. But I do think that this blind taste test is fun. And I do like, as I said at the top of this piece, you know, to challenge my preconceived notions and my assumptions and what I think I know with some real semi-empirical testing. A little virtual camera club news. First, a big thank you to our Inner Circle members, the folks that support this show. They support the Nimble Photographer. They're a lot of fun to hang out with. I did not anticipate that part when I started the Patreon site that I would get, you know, so much enjoyment for it. But I appreciate their activity on our Patreon site, our Inner Circle site, and just think that they are top bananas in the world of photography. Thank you, all of you. Also, I'd like to mention that our friends at Red River Paper, the longest running sponsor of the Digital Story, they have just about everything that you would need for inkjet printing. They have the paper stock. We know that. Just this wide variety of surfaces, beautiful stuff. But they also have the tutorials. They have, you know, the reviews. They have all the accessories that you want, the envelopes, the glassine sleeves, ink cartridges. I mean, this is printing nirvana. And they are our sponsors, and they take good care of us. So thank you, and show your support by clicking on the tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Nose around their site, get some paper, and make some artwork. Also want to mention, as I talked about at the top of the show, that our workshop, our second workshop of the season, is underway. Probably as you listen to this, I'll be out at Sonoma Coast. We have a great crew. And follow on Facebook and Instagram. All those links are on the Digital Story, you know, Twitter, all that stuff. I would recommend that if you want to see what's going on with the workshop, tune in to Instagram and our Digital Story Facebook page. That's where most of the posts will be occurring. And I'll keep you posted. We're going to have a great time. And take a good look and think about next year, because as I've said many times, I think following online is fabulous. It's wonderful. It really gets us through week to week to week. But showing up and hanging out with your fellow photographers once a year, that is special, and that is the stuff that you will never forget. And our next workshop is also sold out, Humboldt Redwoods, and I'm going to start working on that one as soon as I get back from the Sonoma Coast. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Thank you so much for hanging out for another half an hour. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm going to head off to the coast and hang out with some of our Virtual Camera Club members. I will be back next week with more great photography news. I've got some hardware that I'm testing that's in the works. I've got great interviews. It's a happening place. Be a part of it. Until next week, bye-bye now.